Corey Hawkins has just joined me. He's in the studio because we couldn't get the connection with his studio to work. So you might as well come down here or come up. Hi there, Corey.
Kia ora.
Nice to have you on. Now, last night we began by talking about Parliament sitting in Samoa, and that was going to happen sometime today. I assume it did, or is.
Yes, it went ahead. So the first sitting went ahead, and as we talked about yesterday, the opposition HRPP weren't allowed to attend.
They were?
So they weren't allowed to
attend. They weren't?
They were not allowed to attend, so they were stopped outside of Parliament. Police were out in force. There's a bit of protest marching going on, so outside of Parliament, a lot of drama there. The Speaker, again, just going back over it, has said that their refusal publicly and in letters, correspondence with him, to acknowledge fully the FAST government, to him, was them also not acknowledging his role as Speaker, because as we discussed yesterday, which I've since clarified, he was elected Speaker, appointed Speaker in that tent ceremony as a FAST MP. So he is a government Speaker.
Yeah.
So he was saying that if they don't recognise the government, they don't recognise him. So that was the whole tiff. But today, the former Prime Minister, current opposition leader, Tuilapa, turned up, was turned back by police. He had his supporters there. He spoke to them. He called it a sad day for Samoa. The government went on to continue with the business of Parliament. The Prime Minister, Fiame Naomi Matafa, had just got her words off of the Samoa Observer. She's saying that they have only themselves to blame. She's seemingly distancing herself from the Speaker's decision and saying that they've been watching the letters going back and forth between the Speaker and the opposition group. And she just noted that the tone of the letters she thought was quite arrogant and still quite dismissive of the Speaker's role, and that the former Prime Minister had said they wanted to be sworn in by the head of state and not the Speaker if they turned up to Parliament today.
Was anyone arguing that the mere fact that Human Rights Protection Party MPs were prepared to go to Parliament was in some ways an acceptance that there is a change of government, that we're now the opposition, here we are in Parliament?
There was that point was made by Tuilapa. He also said that the fact that we vacated the government offices is proof that we do accept that this government is legitimate. So it seems to be almost person-to-person level problem with the Speaker and the Leader of the Opposition. Interestingly, he also, Tuilapa also raised that they might not have the quorum to sit because obviously 18 HRPP MPs that haven't turned up, that's 26 in the Parliament, so 25 FAST MPs and a single independent MP, but the Speaker isn't counted because he's sitting as the Speaker of Parliament. So there was that question, but I quickly looked up the Constitution before coming up, and it says excluding vacancies, and there are a heap of MPs that aren't in that 51 total because of the election petitions. So they've just come over the line with those people being absent, as in those seats being vacant at the moment.
Have you been able to gauge any reaction from people outside of those political parties in terms of how they feel about, again, a delay in the resumption of normal government?
No, we've spoken with our correspondent on the ground, Tipi Tangavai, who was there, and he was filming outside of court, and It seems people are very much still watching this very closely. The some of the footage I was watching, he had a live camera on the HRPP outside. Then there was quite, although they had shields and all the riot gear and all that, the shields were down. They were just leaning on them, and I saw a few of the police officers shaking hands with the HRPP officials who were sort of respectfully standing outside of the line of scrimmage, so to speak. So it seems something that's going on. He did say that Tipi did say that the HRPP has said they won't challenge this in court at this point. They seem a bit disillusioned with the court. They have this perception that the court is ruling in FAST's favour.
Well, the court did sort of consistently say, yes, this is a legitimate election, and yes, you do have to hand over power, and the Human Rights Protection Party and kept on finding reasons not to for quite some time.
Yes, this is what was repeated by the Prime Minister Fiamme in Parliament today. She was saying there were multiple opportunities provided by the court for HRPP to call Parliament at the time as caretaker government, to call Parliament and have everyone sworn in, but they refused those. And so she says the situation they're in now is kind of come back on themselves in terms of that ability to call Parliament.
Well, so, I remember when Julie Aper was saying, no, we're still the government, that it almost seemed like a kind of almost a pride thing, that he wasn't prepared to back down and admit defeat. And now it almost seems like it's now the Speaker who's maybe been a bit too proud and saying, well, if they're prepared to come to Parliament, then we can make laws, we can debate, and the government has a majority, so it will have a say, a bigger say, about what decisions the government makes.
Yeah, you got to go back a bit and look at the context of it, though, is that the election result was so close. This is what sparked all of these issues. That when it started, it was like split right down the middle. There was just that one independent candidate that was going to choose who the government became, and then it all fell apart after that. So that was sort of the decision that started this sort of debate about who was the actual government. But then of course it descended into that, as you say, constant clinging onto power from the Tuilaepa. It does seem a bit petty. I'm a bit reluctant to use any words here, but it does seem like it, because you're not talking about this, you can't come into Parliament. However, our correspondent did say that they expect. So right now the business of Parliament is looking at the budget that they've been supposed to pass months ago. So they're running on emergency spending at the moment. So they're trying to get that budget through. Apparently they are not going through the normal procedure of going back to the committee with the budget. They're just they're debating the budget and trying to get it passed, because it needs to be passed by the end of the month. So sort of towards the end of that sitting there, they're expecting the Speaker to say something about the next steps in terms of whether there will be a swearing in or what's going to happen next.
I mean, what is most likely to happen? It seems like we've got another impasse here. What is the most likely course of events from here, as far as you can tell?
Well, they're elected. Their mandate's there. They've been elected. So I assume at some point they'll have to be sworn in. Like, you can't ignore someone that's been elected democratically, right, just because they're being unfriendly or whatever. So I would imagine at some point this will resolve with them being sworn in. Just what form that takes or when that happens is the question, yeah.
COVID-19, well, that keeps on keeping on. What's happening with the Cook Islands? And its vaccination rates are very high. I did read somewhere about some people saying, well, we should be opening up. Although, I don't know if I'd want to be opening up to New Zealand or Australia right now, but still.
Yeah, apologies for all the shuffling. I had to print out my notes to come up here. Still COVID-free, the Cook Islands. The new information that I was going to share with you is that the government we've got information that they're saying if Auckland goes down to level 3, they may start repatriation. So there's about 350 Cook Islanders that are stuck in New Zealand waiting to go home. One among them is Hugh Graham, who's part of the National Olympic Committee in the Cook Islands. And he said that if this afternoon's decision had been to go down to level 3, they're expected to be home by the weekend. So that's sort of the new information I was going to share on the Cook Islands. They're saying at level 3, they could start repatriations. I don't know whether that means the bubble is reopening or not, but my understanding...
Repatriate, that just sounds like those who live there and want to go home.
Yeah, I think so. That's what it looks like for now. But yeah, still COVID-free, and their emphasis is on not rushing that and keeping Cook Islands safe is the emphasis there.
What about Fiji and parts of French Polynesia?
Yeah, Fiji calls from the opposition party to really speed up that vaccination in the remote areas. Again, we said yesterday that more than 700 people in the outer islands been infected. NGOs still really concerned. They're saying the messaging and the focus of the government is so much on health that they're forgetting a bit of the context. When they're stopping people from moving around and doing these things, people are sort of, because it's, again, like I said, farming, subsistence kind of lifestyle, they're kind of impinging on people's access to their gardens and their foods and that kind of stuff. So the messaging civil society is worried about might the health restrictions might be causing another crisis in terms of food access and health and those issues. But they're so stretched on the mainland with all the problems in Viti Levu that they're actually unable to go out and help communities in the remote outer islands, which is another logistic exercise altogether. So that's actually a worry, that there's actually not people looking at those aspects yet in the remote parts of Fiji.
We've spoken a bit about people sneaking drugs across the Pacific with yachts, but they're also posting them, are they?
Yeah. I was so happy to be able to talk with Oceania Customs Organization's operations manager, and she had a heap of Daphne, and she had a heap of detail about the stuff that we've been talking about over the past few weeks. So because travel stopped, all of the drugs that were coming through with passengers stopped. But they've seen a corresponding increase in little parcels being sent with drugs. And she was just describing all the weird places that drugs are being stored and stashed in containers, home appliances and all that kind of thing. So it was quite interesting that she talked about that, and also the increase in what we were talking about with the drugs washing up in Tonga with that movement on yachts. And she outlined quite interestingly the fishing vessels actually are a problem as well. Some of the illegal fishing, unreported fishing coming in into these waters and then offloading the drugs from the boats onto local craft. And so she said the biggest problem is when locals get involved, then it becomes really hard to check because they know all of the layouts internally.
I got an email from Turb, and Turb, I don't know quite why Turb sent this email. It could be something to do with the climate question coming up, our next documentary. But he linked me to a BBC article about the fact that at right now the whole container ship situation is just a serious backlog for whatever reasons. And I just wondered, maybe that's holding up the whole illegal drugs trade. If they use containers a lot, well, the drugs and the containers are getting held up. So maybe let's try the fishing boats instead.
Yeah, all of that. And the other thing, though, she did say, I asked which drugs were the big ones, and it is methamphetamine. And another problem they're having is because of the lack of resources, and they're already being stretched just trying to manage the actual drugs, is the precursor chemicals coming through that are used in the production of meth. That's also, they're seeing an increase of that happening, but because they're not scheduled and they're not reported as things that they flag, they can only take note of that. So there's a lot of that coming through as well now in the region that they're seeing in terms of the components for making these drugs.
There's not any hint that Pacific Island nations might be used to cook the stuff in the first place.
Yeah, I'm not sure about that. Yeah,
that could be another question next time you get them on.
Yeah.
There's another story with an update. We're updating everything. I think everything tonight is an update on last night. And the last thing I want to ask you about is futsal. Your Solomon Islands team was taken. Was it Morocco?
Yes, they got thrashed. 6-0 by Morocco. Just too good for them. It's apparently Morocco's first win apparently in the competition. They're African champions, so 6-0, first goal within 2 minutes, and just downhill from there.
How long is a game?
I'm not sure.
Is it 30 minutes a side?
I'm pretty sure it's shorter than a full football game. Yeah. I'm not sure on that. I think it's quarters as well, basketball. It's organized that way. Yeah, so they were quite overrun there. They seem in strong spirits. A bit of backlash from the fans on social media. I saw some of my countrymen not being as supportive, but others were like really proud of them just for being there. And you know, I remember when growing up, we just thought of the next match is Portugal on Friday, and just having that little green, yellow, blue flag next to Portugal's in any tournament seemed quite a fantasy growing up. So they've got them coming up on Friday. They beat Thailand 4-1, so they're doing well as well in
the
group
C. Guessing they've got to play Portugal and then Thailand.
Yes.
And I'm imagining there's no easy games.
No.
Right. Oh, hopefully you'll have good news for us. I guess you won't be able to tell us until Monday.
No.
About that.
Yeah. So hopefully we'll go just a goal. That's what we'd like.
I'll have to remember to ask you on Monday.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us tonight, Karoi.